All right, everybody, welcome back to the Five Hole Taxi Squad, a Five Hole Fantasy Hockey presentation. We are here and back tonight on October 31st, ooh, Halloween night, to bring to you the Week 4 weekend preview. So, without further ado, Jay, start up the fairs and let's get into it. Welcome back, everybody, and welcome in. We are your hosts, Craig, Jay, and Alan. We are here tonight to go over the Week 4 weekend preview. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the pod. Great job on quick fares in my absence in the van cab. We are all back as the main hosts tonight. How are we feeling?
We need more hockey, man. This two games isn't cutting it.
Here I was going to make a Halloween spooked to see you all pun instead. But yeah, absolutely. We need more hockey, man.
But Alan, at least there's a fool's hope happening in the NHL right now. The Anaheim Mighty Ducks might actually be more than the stream central team of 2023. They are just, I'm not going to say putting on a show, but they might have interim hold players that seem to be either red hot right now or actually making, you know, fantasy relevant contributions. You know, you guys hit on Frankie Vetrano on quick fares, but my God, Mason McTavish, Ryan Strome, and the rest of that line are on fuego right now. So that's hockey hope, Alan. That's hockey hope going into week four.
Well, I'm telling you, 29-year-old Frank Vetrano, career high 41 points.
Breakout season.
Breaking that this season.
I saw on Twitter that they are still like, and you guys mentioned on quick fares, they are still like a defensive, just an absolute defensive nightmare in terms of keeping the puck out of their own net and shots on goal. But they are like, I think like 20% more likely to score two or more goals a game compared to last year. Anaheim Ducks, let's go. Best streaming schedule out there. Maybe even some holds. And Leo Carlson, he's going to get released one at some point. Eventually, he's going to get free and he's going to actually contribute. But let's not dive too much into the Ducks. Let's get into the week four weekend preview for the people out there. But we'll take you guys a little bit around the league and we'll start with the, you know, the infirmary, the injuries as per usual. Two things we wanted to point out, and we go back to the Anaheim Ducks here, is John Gibson left last night's game after making a save at the end of the first. He's day to day. We were just talking before we signed on. I believe his name is Lucas Dostal, if I'm not mistaken, the backup there, with how well they're playing right now. And he's able to steal some wins, even with some low save percentages, probably a low end streaming goalie option while we wait on Gibson's status. There was nothing today, you know, pick up Dostal if he's out there, but there might be some fantasy relevance in Anaheim to start the 2023 season. Sam Bennett, Florida Panthers, weird one. He was on IR. He came back. He looked actually pretty good. And then it was like a collision beside the net. And then all of a sudden he was hurt again. There's no status on his update, but I know I did see across the fantasy landscape there was some excitement for him coming back in terms of his bangers coverage and points potential being in that top six. Just unfortunate circumstances for Sam Bennett, and hopefully it's not long term again, like him missing the beginning of the season. But on a positive fantasy note, it did not impact Evan Rodriguez's deployment when he returned. Just throwing it out there. He had
our Lord and Savior, Evan Rodriguez.
He is a fantasy unicorn now. He is all-try eligible, one of those sweet, sweet unicorns in the fantasy world that shoots a lot and is getting top-line, top-power-play deployment. So give him a little look-see. He becomes even more rare now that he has tri eligibility. Storylines and other ongoings around the league. Charlie McAvoy, Boston Bruins, he got suspended for 4 games for his hit on Oliver Ekman-Larsson on Monday night. Oliver Ekman-Larsson did leave that game injured. There's no update on his injury status. It was a pretty dirty hit. I did watch the replay. I'm not surprised OEL got hurt, but I'm sure Jay's going to touch on it. But we all know that Montour and Ekblad are practicing now. The return is probably coming very soon for the Florida Panthers, which is probably a very good thing for that team. Good thing for the fantasy owners that are holding him, holding those individuals. Alan.
What?
But until that time, if OEL is missing any time, Gustav Forsling is probably going to get slotted right into power play one for the Florida Panthers for the short-term future. And then, interesting tidbit, because we always like to talk about, you know, fantasy relevance of the rookies out there. 7 rookies are now within 2 games of the 9-game point. So what that means for the listener out there that may not be familiar with it, once they have played 9 or more games for their respected NHL clubs, they officially burn their first year of their entry-level contract and will most likely be remaining with their NHL club for the duration of the season. This is obviously Connor Bedard. He's not going anywhere. There's no shot in hell the Blackhawks are sending him down. He's definitely going to be here for the duration of the season. Same with Adam Fantilli of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's looked good. We'd like to see him get some more ice time. Pavel Michikov of the Anaheim Ducks. I don't think he's gone anywhere, guys. He's looked really, really good with that team. He's fit in well. He's averaging somewhere in the vicinity of 19 minutes time on ice. He's hitting, he's blocking, he's QB1-ing power play one as well. And then already confirmed by the Boston Bruins, and I'm going to butcher this guy's name, but I'll give it a go. Matthew Potras. I think we mentioned him at one point taking Charlie Coyle's 2C spot already, but he was down in the 3C the last time I looked at the Boston Bruins lines. Be very interesting to see what happens with him. I know Pavel Zeka has been playing a little bit better over the last 3 games, but you know, I definitely see him supplanting himself as the 2C at minimum and maybe getting some opportunities with Pasta and Marchand on the top line as the season goes on. So definitely makes him more fantasy relevant. And then my boy and yours, Logan Cooley, is 2 games away. I don't see him getting sent down at any point. I think he's pretty close to being a lock as well and probably going to be fantasy relevant moving forward the way that Arizona is scoring. And if I'm not mistaken, they just put a beatdown on Monday at 8-1, their top line of Barrett Hayton, Nick Schmaltz, and Clayton Keller had no points, and they scored 8 goals. So that's an interesting tidbit from the Arizona Coyotes. And if this young man can get some more deployment and consistent time on ice, I think he's definitely going to be fantasy relevant. And then just another interesting, because we've talked about it several times on the pod, or at least I've brought it up, the Calder race. Is it going to be Bedard or is it going to be the field? Now, from a rookie point pace, for those that we just mentioned that look like they're going to stick with their teams, Leo Carlson, which we didn't mention, but I'll start with Logan Cooley. He's on a 59-point pace. Matthew Potois, or Portoise, he's on a 51-point pace. Adam Fantilli's on a 41-point pace. And the aforementioned Connor Bedard, who everybody thinks is the leading candidate for the Calder, which I don't think has changed, but that team around him is like really bad, like a tire fire bad. So he's going to have to do it all himself. He's only currently on a 51-point pace in his rookie campaign. 3 other side note rookies, including Leo Carlson, free Leo Carlson. Just let him play a full schedule. Especially if you're going to keep him up for his first year in the NHL. He's on a 62-point pace and he's only played 4 games. And then Ridly Grigg from the Ottawa Senators is actually leading all rookies in point pace at 72-point pace. I would imagine that is probably unsustainable given his kind of up and down deployment from the top 6 to the third line. But we will see, because Ottawa still has a very strong pedigree in terms of scoring. And then Bobby Brink of the Philadelphia Flyers is second on rookie point pace at 70. We'll see if that can be sustained. I don't know. You guys would agree with me. I don't see the Flyers maintaining this pace as a team in terms of scoring and winning and being relevant in their division for very much longer. Maybe that still means there's some fantasy relevant players on that team. And then for those that I've seen many people discussing, because he is eating at Dougie Hamilton's deployment and value in the fantasy world, Luke Hughes is currently on a 62 point pace as a rookie with the Devils. If you don't know this already, he's getting more power play share than Dougie Hamilton to start the season. So that probably has a big part to play in his point pace out the gate. So definitely some rookies to keep an eye on, even a lower end one, if you want to call him that. Luke Evangelista from the Nashville Predators has heated up a little bit over the last week and a half, and he's now on a 51 point pace, getting third line and top power play deployment in Nashville, you know, with a resurgent Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly kind of leading the way there from a scoring perspective. Before we jump into schedules for the weekend, for week four, we'll just dive into the mailbag from the listeners. And we've got two from the Discord that we wanted to give to the guys. Alan, I will give you this one first, because the other one is about defensemen, and I don't want to take away that juice from Jay. So, Alan Wick on the Discord, any chance this season Byfield actually steps up and hints at breaking out? Big guy, good speed, skill, and deployment, but it's not translating yet. I know bigger players can take longer. What do we think? Alan, I'll give it to you first.
Yeah, well, it looks like he got 2 points tonight, so that's kind of counter to my argument. But no, is he getting the opportunity at even strength? Yeah, with Kopitar, awesome. But I don't think he's getting power play time at all. And just looking at what he's done so far this season, like, I mean, the time on ice is there. He's getting about 15 minutes. I think right now I saw you shooting at about 15%, which is probably not sustainable. I will say his ice time has increased over the last few years, but I don't quite see him as being fantasy relevant hold this year. And I know he was, second overall pick for his draft class. So, I mean, he's got the high pedigree. So there's potential. But this year, I'd say, if the Kings have a great schedule, maybe you stream them in. But as far as long-term hold, I'd say not this season.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there for sure. I think the biggest thing that's holding back Byfield, you know, he is on PP2 there in LA. From what I've read and what I've seen, they're actually doing like a 60-40 split this year. It's not pushing that 50-50 share currently in terms of the share across both power plays. But I think the biggest thing holding Quinton Byfield back, until his time on ice changes, like increases to that, you know, 17 plus per minute time on ice, I think hoping for a quote-unquote breakout from the young man is unlikely. I think they're going to insulate him for quite some time because they can. He's got a lot of protection in that lineup where he doesn't have to do a whole lot from a responsibility standpoint, because, you know, you have the likes of Kopitar, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Trevor Moore, Philip Deneau, even Kevin Fiala and Adrian Kempe. They're all getting all of the, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 plus minutes a night on that team playing, you know, the quote unquote trusted minutes at even strength. They don't need the Kaliyevs, the Byfields to log heavy minutes right now. They can just kind of stick them in that 13 to 15 minute time on ice with limited responsibility and see what happens as their development takes place, kind of with these NHL kind of stalwarts and veterans kind of insulating them. So I think until they're given 16 and a half to 17 minute or more, I think that's going to continue to limit Quinton Byfield's ceiling, regardless of his draft pedigree and how good he could be. I don't think you're going to see that, at least for a couple of years. I think you're not going to really see opportunity from a Byfield standpoint until Kopitar hangs up the skates. I don't know what you think, Jay.
You don't necessarily need, in order for you to succeed in your redraft league, a player that, I guess, is hinting at breaking out. What you actually want are players that are broken out. And the problem with Byfield is not necessarily that he can't get the 17 minutes in a game. The problem is that that's not consistent, and it's not anything against Byfield. It's not anything against him being a big guy or not being skilled or whatnot. The problem with it is simply that the LA Kings this season are built for competing now. There's Kopitar. There's Dubois. There's Deneau. They have a structured, organized idea already for their team before they stepped on ice of what they want this team to be. They want this team to challenge for the playoffs. And the question really is more not about, oh, can Byfield break out? Oh, is he skilled? Oh, no. The question is, where does Byfield fit for the LA Kings for that goal? The only real goal I can see that can be an avenue for the LA Kings for him to succeed is, and like, I'm knocking on wood right here, but if Kopitar gets hurt, like seriously hurt, not just whatever, and he's gone for the season, and the LA Kings have to quickly fall into, well, we can try it out and have Byfield eat up all those minutes that were vacated, or they're going to say, yeah, we're going to drop the whole shebang and we're basically tanking now, and Byfield, you're going to be tank commander. Maybe that opens up fantasy-wise for Byfield to break out and play all those minutes and play all those things, but the way the LA Kings are right now, there's no spot, there's no availability for Byfield to soak up the minutes to be fantasy relevant.
Didn't you all guys mention on Quick Fares too, they're like the second highest scoring team in the league right now, and it's kind of sprinkled everywhere. So to Alan's point, like Byfield and Kaliev might have some viability from a streaming perspective when the Kings have a good schedule, but even like this kind of maybe hints at what I was saying before, that they're going to insulate them, specifically Byfield and Kaliev, even more so this year because they're both RFAs next year. Sorry, if I'm that organization and I don't need to play them in high leverage minutes and I don't quote unquote want them to produce at a high level, I'm going to insulate them and conserve their minutes so I don't have to pay them. I can bridge both of them and keep them a little bit longer in the development stage. I'm using quotations and nobody can see me other than Alan and Jay, but of their careers for a little bit longer, because really, why wouldn't you want to do that, especially with Kopitar, you know, signing that extension and being, you know, with the Kings until the 25-26 season before he's a UFA. I would imagine he's going to retire there, right? So if I'm the Kings, I'm not going to rush Byfield's development or his potential to break out in any shape or form, because I don't want to pay him. Because if you look at their cap friendly, my God, they have a lot of money tied up in six of their top forwards to at least 2025-2026 season. To wrap it up for Wick, no. He's not prime for a breakout, but he is a streaming candidate when the Kings have a prime schedule because of where he's playing at even strength. So, Jay, I'm going to give this one to you, and I'm going to try not to butcher this listener's name in the Discord. We're going to call him Jaggy Lonya. Jaggy Lonya, 8 on the Discord. This is an interesting one. Should Sean Jersey be owned over Rowinski and or Hamilton, Dougie Hamilton, and or Jake Sanderson? Rank them, please. Jersey is a free agent in my league, and he is currently ranked based on their scoring, this is my interpretation of the question, 50th overall in this league. What say you, Jay?
Again, everything makes an assumption of, I guess, our own specific league stats. The first one I would say, no matter what, is all these guys, just on a quick glance around, are line one, or I guess D1, power play one guys. So in a vacuum, they will get very similar deployment. although I have been seeing rumblings with that Luke Hughes setup, and that could be a concern, potentially. It's a question if that will stay for an entire season. Sanderson isn't even, like, he's not even, I think, the power play one quarterback consistently. So that could be an immediate red flag right there on my end in terms of ranking them. The question as well seems to be this league is an interesting format because he just listed out 4D, but he's posing it as if he can't keep all of them.
My assumption is he's considering he owns Rowinski, Hamilton, and Sanderson, and he's considering dropping one of them for Jersey, is what my interpretation of the question would be.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just saying this is a unique league to not have 4D slots if that's his setup and he's required to drop one of them. I would say if Jersey is the free agent, I would definitely say see if you can find another person to drop. Is there somebody else you can drop aside, even outside of your defenseman, where you can hold on to four? That would be my immediate thought process with power play quarterbacks being so difficult and rare to acquire. The alternative, if he had to say somebody needed to be dropped, I would personally hesitate, I guess, a little bit over Werenski. I say this as a Werenski holder, but I don't know. That Band-Aid boy in training really makes me wonder if you can maybe just wait till Werenski gets hurt next time and just IR plus Werenski and then take Jersey. But I'll pass it off to Craig and Alan.
It's very simple for me. And I know Alan's chomping at the bit to get Rowinski in the listener league because I dropped him. Okay. I know he's going to get him and he's going to have like 7 power play quarterbacks because he's listening to Jay too much. You're not dropping Hamilton. You're not dropping Jake Sanderson based on the way he's started the season and the deployment he's getting in Ottawa. Right now, in a vacuum, Columbus is not scoring and Arizona is scoring with a lot of contribution from Sean Jersey. If these are your options, I would be dropping Jersey or Werenski for Jersey. Werenski would be the bottom of that list for me right now. From what I've watched, and Alan, I know you have some insider information of the Columbus Blue Jackets. They don't look like what I was hoping for in terms of offensive output, at least to start the season. It looks kind of messy there, and it looks really sluggish. I'm not going to say that it's going to stay that way because, you know, Johnny Goudreau and Boone Jenner and Adam Fantilli and Zach Rowinski all have pedigree, Fantilli aside, rookie, and there should be some scoring there. But I also think they have a lot of new pieces on that team that they're trying to kind of figure out where everybody goes and who should be playing with who, especially in their top six. The Line A injury doesn't help their offensive output either. So to me, it would be ranked right now based on where everybody sits. It would be Sanderson first, Hamilton second because of his pedigree. And I am a little bit concerned about what's going on in terms of deployment with Hughes kind of stealing some power play share from Hamilton. Again, I think we're looking potentially a similar situation that happened in Tampa, given the young defenseman run on the power play. So the older, more experienced defenseman can play the heavier, even strength minutes. But again, it's not like Dougie Hamilton is a defensive fucking stalwart defenseman. So I think he eventually gets the prime deployment back in New Jersey. And then it's Jersey for me and Rowinski last. I don't know, Alan, what do you got for closing thoughts on that question?
So I would say the only defenseman, I agree with you, Craig, the only defenseman I would drop to pick up Jersey would be Werenski. Yeah, what star power they do have, again, like you said, Line is hurt. Goudreau, as you said, you dropped in Kerfoot to much ado.
It was exciting. It was exciting today. Times.
Like he's not doing much, but looking at them all apples to apples, they all have very similar point counts right now. Like, yeah, that was how I was going to help decide my ranks is, like you said, I think Hamilton goes back, but in the meantime, he's still getting it done. What I see, he had like 6 points in 8 games, which I mean, from a defenseman, yeah, there are probably a lot of forwards who don't even have that many points right now. And he's still doing Dougie things. Sanderson, though, the only thing that keeps me from ranking him higher than Hamilton is the unsustainability he's got going on right now with that shooting percentage. And even Durzi's shooting percentage is a little unsustainable right now. But I would say, yeah, it'd be Dougie, Sanderson, Durzi, and then Werenski at the bottom.
Yeah, and I think just, and maybe Jay's going to steal this, but I'm going to steal this thought from him. It also depends on the category coverage you need, right? Werenski's going to have more shots on goal, but you would have that covered from a Hamilton perspective if you need a kind of a more of a balanced approach. Durzi doesn't really hit, but he blocks more than Werenski does. So he's my quote unquote in that group of people, other and Sanderson as well. The block specialists out of the four of them is Sanderson and Durzi. So if you do need block coverage plus the point upside, you know, that puts Durzi in the favor, you know, in favor over Werenski as well. And that might even make your defense more balanced because you already have shots on goal covered from a Hamilton perspective.
The other part, too, is that I think a lot of the times we get really caught up in the fervor of the waiver wire and picking up like this guy that's going to save our season and dominate. But truthfully, you could also drop a player that makes or breaks your season as well. And so I think just if you look from that perspective at the players available that were listed, if you drop Hamilton, that is genuinely taco league potential, right?
Yeah, you're not getting right.
back. So you can't drop Hamilton objectively. If you drop Werenski, and this sounds terrible to any Werenski holders, and I'm one too, but I genuinely think you could drop Werenski and people could forget about him. Because
Allen's not going to forget about him.
Because truthfully, aside from the PP1 deployment, Werenski truly, honestly, has been injured a lot over the past few seasons. He's even been injured now when we haven't even played 10 games. The problem also with dropping Sanderson is these three players are probably just like the perfect spattering of defenseman setups that are on the cusp. Anyway, there's Hamilton. He's your stalwart. I don't know what they're doing in New Jersey, but Hamilton is your bona fide prima donna. He could honestly have been chosen after Makar, the next best defenseman. You don't get any of them ever. Sanderson is breaking out possibly if Ottawa's trajectory keeps going to become a similar Hamilton setup. Werenski doesn't have that sort of pedigree. He's not. His team won't let him get to that point of pedigree. Werenski's best setup is he can be he munches all the minutes on a really shitty team. That's his best setup. And honestly, I think that's basically Durzi, right? Like, there's no real difference if you're going Durzi or Werenski or Seth Jones in terms of how they're realistically ceilinged. And you might as well get Durzi for the lack of injury history there. Man, the more I'm talking about this, yeah, you definitely should pick up Durzi and drop Werenski.
Jay's convincing himself. Okay, so before we dive into schedule for the week 4 weekend preview and some streaming options, and then Jay will take you through strategy, just a quick couple of honorable mentions from the news in the league. Big Joe Thornton announced his retirement, so the pod, the taxi squad, want to give him a shout-out, one of the Iron Men of the NHL. All power to a man who can play 1,714 career games and amass 1,539 points, including 1,109 assists in his career. Craziest stat when I was looking at this, just to give our big Joe Thornton a shout out. On his career, he is a plus 182 player. So all he does is contribute from a positive standpoint in terms of goals for versus goals against. I didn't actually know that he was kind of a bit of a penalty minute provider earlier in his career too, in his Boston days. I find that interesting. We salute you, Joe Thornton, for a wonderful career spread across the Boston Bruins, the San Jose Sharks, and I guess Toronto and Florida, but the majority of his career was spent with San Jose and Boston. So salute you, Joe. Enjoy your ride into the sunset. And I'm sure those fantasy managers that leaned on you in your Boston and San Jose days, you will be missed. And an honorable mention is Paul Stastny, also announced his retirement. The Taxi Squad salutes those two gentlemen on their retirement, and enjoy the ride in the next stage of your life. And I'm just going to acknowledge this before I give it to Alan, because he put me on blast. Yes, I dropped Johnny Gaudreau in Kakupful, tier 8, okay? I am hurting in that league for streaming spots. I am hurting in that league in terms of overall performance to start the year. And he is hurting me in multiple spots. And I needed to do something drastic to pull that Band-Aid off in Kakupful to try to make some headway in that league and in that division so I could at least get to the second half of the season with some sort of respectability. And hey, cool, it may smack me in the face if he gets back to his point per game status of who apparently a lot of people believe he still is. But, you know, I advised the other GMs in the Kakupful division that were critical of my decision. Don't get lost in the name. Johnny Gaudreau has only played a point per game or better 3 times in his career. And it has not shocked me that he has gone to Columbus and disappeared. He didn't want to play in a big Canadian hockey market for a reason, despite his great final year performance. Okay. Pretty sure he was just afraid of Daryl Sutter at that time. So he's just like, I got to produce and I got to get the bag of money. I got to get out of here. I can't handle the pressure of playing in the Greek. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, it's a drastic move to quote unquote drop a star. But I ask you, is Johnny Gaudreau in a categories league where you need hits and blocks coverage a star player in a scoring setup like Kupfel that he finished 87th overall last year with the likes of Owen Tippett, Tomáš Hertl, Michael Backlund, Travis Konecny, all scoring very similar overall performances to Johnny Gaudreau? And the answer is no. A star on a fantasy hockey team finishes in the top 40 in scoring, period. Maybe in a full points league where there's no hits and blocks, sure, you want Johnny Gaudreau, but not this guy. When drastic times call for drastic measures, you got to pull the chute. But that is my cab confessional that I missed in quick fares for the people out there. So, Alan, why don't you take us away with the week 4 weekend streaming and best schedules?
Yeah, well, this weekend's looking a little sparse. The only team that has that sweet Friday-Sunday schedule is Jersey. The teams that have just Friday are Buffalo, Philly, and St. Louis. And then the Sunday teams are Anaheim, Chicago, and Vegas. I think everyone but 2 teams play on Saturday. So there's just not much in trying to pick someone up to get the Friday, Saturday back-to-back or Saturday, Sunday back-to-back. Streamers, points leagues, I'd say now that he is back and actually showing up, Eric Haula, left wing, 21% owned. Line 3, power play 2, but he's got 3 goals in his last 2 games, which is exactly what we want in a streamer. Someone hot and actually producing at the moment. And there's also Andre Palat, and I always roll my eyes when I have to suggest him, but yeah, he's getting the deployment. But to me, from his Tampa days, like, he was never quite a consistent score sheet player. He's that kind of intangibles guy. So to me, if I had a choice, I'd Haula is the guy I'd want on Jersey. Casey Mittelstadt, still out there, very lightly owned. He had a goal in his last game, and right now he's centering Jeff Skinner. Looks like they've broken up that Skinner and Tuck duo. All of Philly's top line is still somehow less than 50% owned. I'm shocked. And again, that's Couturier, Tippett, and Atkinson. And then Rob Thomas, he's only 23% owned. Like, I know we shit on him on the show, but top line, top power play, Those guys aren't super widely available.
There's no hate. It's just shoot the damn puck more, man. Like, come on.
But I mean, for a points league, yeah, you're getting something out of them. And then goalie streams, look for Akira Schmid to either get Chicago or St. Louis on Philly. Erson should either get Buffalo or L.A. Joel Hoffer alert hopefully sees Montreal. It's not part of a back-to-back, but if I had to guess, we could see Laurent Brossoit from Winnipeg against Arizona on Saturday. And there's always the Chicago goalies if you really want to roll the dice there. Big boy banger streams, Jonas Siegenthaler jersey, 8% owned, D-man, gets you all that coverage. Once again, I check, and I'm surprised, Radko Gudas is only 41% owned. If your league tracks hits to any capacity that's worthwhile, like he's a must roster. Nick Delorier, the time traveler, left wing, 4% on Philly, had an apple last game, and he throws the body quite a bit. That's what I got. I'll hand it over to Jay.
Oh my goodness, Alan. Every single bit of little tidbit juicy stuff you've snagged. Oh my goodness, that was incredible.
It keeps Jay shorter, so that's good for the people out there. But just before Jay takes it from a strategy perspective, I'm just going to say, Buffalo, what in the bloody hell is going on? Are you fading your own top player in Tage Thompson? You want to explain to me why he's playing with Jordan Greenway and Brandon Biro at even strength? What the fuck is happening? Do they not want to be good this year? Like, I don't understand. Like, put your top six back together that was so successful last year. I know it was a slow out the gate, blah, 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 blah. Like, what is happening? I don't even know who Brandon Biro is. Like,
they're tanking for Bedard.
Like, I don't want to digress so far into, like, can people just, like, leave their star players playing with their star players? Like, what the fuck is happening? Jay, jeez, take it away from strategy.
To be fair, Craig, you did preempt it slightly with, you do need drastic steps and measures. The Buffalo Sabres are somehow bottom of the Atlantic right now. And I'm flabbergasted, but I agree with the idea that something drastic has got to change. Let's dig into the week four weekend strategy. Given the fact that we've already covered the need to check out Florida's power play quarterback situation, given that OEL, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, is injured. He's day-to-day. Generally, with a concussion, you really don't know. Like, we could have him right out on the ice in a couple of days, and also, he could be out for a very long time. We generally and genuinely don't know, but monitor that. Forsling is 56% owned, so see what happens there. If he's around and available, I would definitely say he's worthwhile to pick up and see, given what we'll tackle a little bit with the week five overlapping schedule as well. The other good snipe as well is if Charlie McAvoy is suspended for 4 games, today we're recording this on Halloween, right? So October 31st. The next 4 games, or I guess the 5th game after that McAvoy is eligible to play, is Saturday, November 11. So that's a good full 2 weeks away, basically. Boston is still going to need a power play quarterback one. So look in and check, right? Hampus Lindholm, I think everybody is already on the ball with it. I think he was even drafted, right, with the idea that he could have taken PP1 QB. So he's 64% owned, still means in a third of leagues he's available. Boston doesn't have that great a schedule on either this remaining week four or upcoming week five, but just go check, right? If you can do a heck of a lot worse on your waiver wire than a Boston Bruins power play one quarterback. Now, Hampus Lindholm isn't necessarily the most exciting one because he's 64% owned, but the other guy that is definitely going to slot up and get some more power play share now is 1% owned, Kevin Shattenkirk. I mean, don't snag him immediately after you hear this because it's like, oh my goodness, Kevin Shattenkirk. No, he's Boston schedule ain't that great. No, so don't absolutely jump on the bandwagon for it. But the other component,
you should have stopped at Lindholm. What did you bring up Shattenkirk for? I almost shat in my pants when you said that name.
Well, what is going to happen no matter what is the Boston Bruins are now going to have an expanded time, or I guess expanded power play time shares available for both their first and second power plays, which means some defenseman of some sort is going to have to eat that time. Hampus Lindholm is like, I'd say 90-95% likely to be the guy in power play one. Who's going to eat the power play two time? There's got to be someone. Most likely Shattenkirk at 1% owned. You can go worse. You can go worse. Now, to go specifically for teams that we're targeting on week to weeks, Alan covered it absolutely. There is only one team to target with that Friday-Sunday off-night setup. Go for New Jersey, whoever is best available and left. I looked in our listener league. It's not the greatest. There's Howla, Siegenthaler. And, man, when you have Akira Schmid, who's not even getting that many games, and he's still 38% owned, and I think he's owned in the league too, it's just a tough team to target. So I would say if you're...
Jay, I'm surprised you haven't picked up all those guys yet. Like, what's going on? Are you okay? Like, do we have to check your temperature?
So, if all those guys are already taken, then your best bet actually is just to save any additional ads for the next slate of players, right? Which are any potential players that play on the Friday-Saturday back-to-back or the Saturday-Sunday back-to-back. Now, Alan did touch up on this too, which is 30 teams play on Saturday. So you're most likely going to be staring at a full bench anyway. But in the off chance you have, you know, a D slot open or a right wing slot open, check up on some of these teams, right? So three teams have a Friday, Saturday back-to-back. There's Philly, Buffalo, St. Louis. Philly, we've honestly exhausted the pipe out of that team already. But again, yeah, they play on Saturday. So, you know, Friday, Saturday. Sure, if you can fit him in, you might as well take him in at least for the Friday. Buffalo is one of those teams that plays a Friday-Saturday back-to-back. I don't really think it's worth mentioning them, given the fact that Dylan Cousins isn't really producing that much either, and he's still 83% owned because everybody assumed that the Sabres were just going to rock the fantasy hockey world. You're looking at names like Casey Mittelstadt, which doesn't make me too excited, to be honest. So let's just move on. If there's an better available Buffalo player, sure, go for them.
That hurts me so deep down. Tage, come back to us. Come back to us.
St. Louis, though, is a treasure trove that has not been unpacked yet. Alan already tacked on it. Robert Thomas, guys, line one, power play one, 23% owned. Come on. Yes, Craig was also right. He doesn't shoot the puck, but maybe... maybe these two upcoming Friday Saturdays he will, just for us. Probably not, though. Brayden Schenn, 36% owned. Also PP1. Torrey Crew, we preached so much about power play one quarterbacks. 21% owned. Torrey Crew, there's no week to own him, but if there is a week, it's this weekend. Get him on. St. Louis actually is such a poor fantasy team to own that they have basically power play one guys everywhere. Kasperi Kapanen, I don't even think you even remember this guy. He's 1% owned. Most of the league doesn't really remember him either, but he's on the power play one. A couple of other teams to note and mention, I guess, specific strategies are, then you have the, not just the Friday, Saturday back-to-back, then there's the Saturday, Sunday back-to-back. I'll just mention it quickly to roll through. There's Vegas, and there's Chicago. Vegas has a bunch of players. Just look on your team. But Paul Cotter's been having a really, really hot time. He doesn't actually get any power play time. He only gets 13 minutes a night. He's just a pinball machine out there, like disguised on skates. Because the guy has 30. He plays 13 minutes a night. He has 37 hits in 10 games. That's a cool average of 3.7 hits a game. So if you can fit him into your lineup on Saturday, that means he's definitely going to fit on your lineup on Sunday. You can bounce him on straight back in. Yeah, get the pun there with all the hits and the bounce. Anyways, so yeah, just bounce him in. And yeah, he'll fit on your lineup somewhere. And geez, yeah, 3.7 hits a game. Oh my goodness.
Paul Cotter could be one of those players that evolves from a big boy banger to a big, beautiful winger for the taxi squad this year.
Absolutely. And geez, there's even other guys that are, what, like William Karlsson. Well, he gets power play 2 access. He's 45% owned. He's, yeah, it's a 50-50 toss-up if he's there or not. Ivan Barbashev, though, my goodness, he's center and left wing eligible, power play 2 access. Tons of managers are dropping him. Maybe, you know, a Saturday, Sunday back-to-back's the time to, you know, own him up before the week's out. Also, Alec Martinez. Now, I have him in some of my dynasty leagues, and, you know, you just...
Of course you do. Of course you do.
And he's kind of just, you know, chucked away, socked away on the IR plus. Like he seems like he's always hurt. He bounces between IR, DTD, and all that stuff. But he is back now. He's 11% owned. Somehow also, I didn't even realize was on the power play too. But you're not getting him for any of that. All that extra stuff is gravy. Dude has only played 6 games so far in the season and has 24 blocks. I'm going to say that again. That's insane. He's played 6 games so far and has 24 blocks. He is averaging 6 blocks a game. Now, I hate, personally, categories leagues. It boggles and bothers me immensely. But if you play in a categories league, tell me any other player that can net you 4 blocks a game. He is an immediate at 11% must own. Probably must hold, too, if he continues that average up.
It's getting very spicy on Alec Martinez right now. This is a lot of love there.
Now, Chicago is the other team that plays the Saturday-Sunday back-to-back, and that team, geez, there's just everyone, right? Like, poor Connor Bedard.
I think you just leave it at that. Poor Connor Bedard.
There's tons of guys around, and like Ryan Donato, 2% owned, line 1 power play 1 center. And I do have to say it, at the end of the day, I'm not the biggest fan of him. Corey Perry, 5% owned. He's a proven winner across every metric and everything. Unbelievably, at 5% owned compared to Bedard's, I think like 100% ownership, they have the same amount of points. 6 points in the number of games played so far. There are no teams that play on a week 4 Sunday rolling into a week 5 Monday. So you don't need to worry about that back to back. And again, with our strategy describing before with the weekend preview, if you are ever needing to come and roll into a Saturday or a in a Saturday evening or a Sunday morning and you're rolling in and you decide, I am going to have to call it quits on week 4, you need a couple of these players. But the first team you always have to target is any team with a Monday, Tuesday back-to-back on week 5. There's only one team that matches that description, and that's Tampa. So you can go through all the Tampa players and all that stuff for your week 5.
Don't give all your juicy tidbits away for the week 5 preview, Jay.
Okay. All right, we'll rein it back. But yeah, that's... one team to target, and I guess you have to listen in on the week 5 preview.
Well done, Jay. Well done, Alan. So to wrap up to the week 4 weekend preview, we will do as we always do. We kind of try to fill up the van cab with some taxi squad watchlist dudes.
Taxi!
Pavel Zacha, 43% owned. In the last week, he has 5 points, 3 goals, 2 assists, 11 shots on goal, 9 hits, and 1 block. Just so everybody is aware out there, Jay's looking right now if he can go get him somewhere, I would imagine. He is centering the top line in Boston, which I still believe is Pasta and Marchand, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it is. And he is centering their top power play unit. Despite McAvoy's suspension, that is still a lethal unit. And as you guys mentioned on Quick Fares, don't underestimate Boston, and it looks like Pavel is settling in the 1C and has built some nice chemistry with Pasta. So he will be riding along in the taxi squad until his ownership goes up. Jaden Schwartz of the Seattle Kraken, center left wing, only 13% owned. In the last 7 days, he has 6 points, 2 goals, 4 assists, 16 shots on net, 2 hits, and 3 blocks. He is on line two with Alex Wenberg and Jordan Eberle at even strength. And he is on the second power play unit with Matty Beniers, Kyler Yamamoto, Vince Dunn, and Eli Tolvanen. And we all know how Seattle rolls their lines, but Jaden Schwartz is one of the hottest guys in fantasy right now. It is definitely time to put him on your watch list or stream him whenever Seattle has a good schedule. I can't believe I'm going to admit this, but it might be real to both of you. The Monahanaissance, or whatever the hell you guys are calling it.
Monahanaissance.
He might actually be healthy for the first time in like 5 years. And he might be, do I dare say, a legitimate fantasy asset for 2023, even on a low-hanging fruit that is the Montreal Canadiens. But through their first 10 games, he has 8 points, 2 shorthanded goals, 22 shots, 2 hits, and 2 blocks. Out of those 8 points, 3 of them are on the power play. So you guys might be on to something, and I did watch the Habs play over the weekend, which is surprising, but I was just jonesing for some hockey, and he actually might look healthy for the first time since his like healthy Calgary Flames days. Like, his legs might be working. Does help when he's getting, you know, all of the deployment with the Habs. Especially with that Doc injury, he's definitely getting prime deployment, not so much at even strength, but he's getting like 20 plus minutes a night with Tanner Pearson and Brendan Gallagher at even strength in that third line kind of shutdown role. But he's also on the top power play. Man, you guys might have been onto something early in this season. He's only 22% owned at this time. And then I've seen him dropped a lot of places, which I find is interesting, and it's probably an insult to Allen. And I know it has to come down to schedule and not having his right wing eligibility like he did last year. But Dylan Strom, 32% owned, still centering that top line with Ovi and Tom Wilson, and on the top power play with them. Yes, in the last 7 days, he has 4 goals and 8 shots on net and 1 block. So he's certainly heating up and getting prime deployment on a team that is still kind of sleepy, but I wouldn't be surprised if they wake up at some point. Our last rendition to the taxi squad for this week 4 weekend preview. I'm going to another center, and I know that the position is deep, but I'm just looking at deployment and playing with prime players. And we've mentioned this man before, but with it, if you have faceoffs in your league, is Ryan Johansson from the Colorado Avalanche playing on line 2 with Valeri Nichushkin and Riley Tufate? I don't know what his last name is. But he's still on the top power play unit with all those elite players. Rantanen, McKinnon, maybe Devin Taves if Makar is out, and Lekkonen. As waiver wires start to thin, which many have, if you are in a 12-team league or more, you need to start looking for guys that have deployment. And that's what's going to support them being a little bit more sustainable. Honorable mention, because he is getting top-line deployment, Ty Karate, left wing, Seattle Kraken rookie. He is playing on the top line for the last 4 games with Matty Beniers and Oliver Bjorkstrand. His time on ice has been a little bit all over the place. He isn't getting power play 1, but the reason that I mention him is he is shooting a lot, which means there is point upside potential if he can maintain 16 to 17 minutes time on ice, which is what he got 2 games ago. He got 16-21 and 17-28. And on the season, he has 25 shots on goal and 12 hits. I think that's it, boys. Why don't we park the van cab and say goodbye to the listeners, and thank you for listening as always. Please follow us on Twitter/X. You'll find that in the show notes. Please, if you are not part of it already, join the 5-Hole Fantasy Hockey Discord. It's a huge community now. I believe Alan mentioned it's over 2,400 strong of like-minded fantasy hockey individuals, talking all things fantasy hockey and life in general. Like and subscribe and give us 5 stars on wherever you get your great podcasts. We will be back later this week for the week 5 preview. It's good to be back in the saddle here, boys, on the Van Cab. And it's all, we are always grateful for the listeners out there giving us the time in their day to hear us out, even though some of our opinions might be crazy. I can't wait for the listeners to chime in on me dropping Johnny Gaudreau and Cupful as well. That'll be fun. And don't forget to, if you haven't already, check it out. Please check out Mike Rogerson's Rog's 5-hole fantasy hockey guide. He is through 5 episodes on that limited series. 2 more to come. Take a look at that if you haven't heard it. It's some good stuff, especially if you are new at fantasy or new at commissioning a league. With that said, as always, it's all love. We will be back soon. We'll park the van cab for now. Jay, turn off the fares. Let's get the hell out of here. There's much more hockey to come this week. Good luck in your matchups. We'll be back very soon.
Keep tanking hard for Bedard, Buffalo.
We'll pick you up later.
Good night, everybody.